Call this meeting the Judiciary Committee to order. Chair recognizes a quorum. Members, today we will be hearing two bills on the agenda. The first is a holdover from last Thursday. That's House File 1196. And we will be hearing House File 1500. So 1196 is the data privacy, protecting applicants and employees' personal usernames and passwords from access by employers. This will be laid over for inclusion into the omnibus bill. And then House File 1500 is the driver's license bill. The plan is to adopt the amendment and recommend it be re-referred to Ways and Means. This bill has already had one hearing in transportation. First item of business, do I have a motion to approve the minutes of February 28th? So Representative Herr moves the minutes of February 28th. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed say no. Motion passes. The minutes of February 28th are approved. Members, that bill, 1196 is my bill, so Vice Chair Mohler will assume the gavel.
All right, Chair Lesh, would you like to move your bill to get it before the committee?
I would, Madam Chair.
All right, Chair Lesh moves his bill to be laid over for inclusion into the Data Practices Omnibus Bill. So now we have the bill before us. Chair Lesh, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill prohibits employers from forcing or coercing their employers or job applicants into providing access to their personal social media accounts, except under a limited set of circumstances that are found in Subdivision 2. It also prohibits employers from taking or threatening to take action against an employee for refusing to disclose this information. That's in Subdivision 3. Now, employers may access information about an employee that is publicly available. So if you got your site up but anyone can see it, that's fine. It's in the public domain. Or to comply with state or federal law, for example, security clearance, etc., to request or require an employer or applicant to share specific content that has been reported to the employer for purposes of ensuring compliance with legal or regulatory requirements, or to investigate certain allegations. Also, to prohibit an employee from using a personal account for business purposes, and to prohibit an employee from accessing or operating a personal account during business hours while on business property. The bill provides an enforcement mechanism which allows an employee to take legal action for damages or equitable relief. Members, this bill is something that is needed in the digital age. A lot of people are living a substantial portion of their lives on the interwebs, and that means people can find out a lot more about you than they used to with a click of a button, and we should not be allowing employers into our private lives that way. We don't let our employers into our homes or our bedrooms. We should not let them into our digital lives without permission. So, and I have here Mr. Ben Feist with the ACLU of Minnesota, who can talk more about it.
Welcome back, Mr. Feist. Go right ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Ben Feist, Legislative Director with the ACLU of Minnesota. Thank you, Representative Lesh, for bringing this bill forward and to the committee for hearing it this evening. Over the past several years, there's been a strong bipartisan consensus that we need to empower Minnesotans to take control of their privacy and bring our digital privacy laws into the 21st century. We believe that every person should have the right to decide who they want to share personal, private information with. Privacy is not about keeping secrets. It's about maintaining control over our own lives. Today, Minnesotans are as likely to use a social media or other personal online account to communicate to a selective audience as they were to use telephone a generation ago. It's a popular forum for the exchange of ideas, and personal information will be compromised if employees and prospective employees know they may be forced to provide employers with access to these accounts. This bill creates an appropriate balance by prohibiting employer access unless one of the number of exceptions applies, which we think is the reasonable way to go for our state. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right, great. Members, do you have any questions? Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, thank you. Overall, I agree to a lot of the concept of this bill. I just was sitting here thinking that there might be some exceptions where it may be needed to have that information I can think of a couple of situations where it's a high security type and a real thorough background needs to be done for the hiring. I'm just wondering if there's any exceptions to in the bill to that.
Well, Madam Chair and Chair Johnson, I think those are exceptions under Subdivision 4.2, or there's one other subdivision. But to comply with federal law, so a security clearance or something like that, it would be. And, you know, the folks that I know that have either secret or top secret security clearance, I mean, the hoops they have to jump through to do that, they pretty much know that they're like, I mean, there is no privacy. If you've got a secret clearance, you're an open book, and that's the way that they want it and is what it is. But I agree with you. I believe that the exceptions crafted in here should be adequate. We haven't received any indication that they're not.
Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative, I just want to make that clear because there is some occasional circumstances where that might come into play, and I don't want to have this law be a problem.
Madam Chair, Chair Johnson, you know, if that were to pop up, I would be one of the first who would want to offer an amendment to make that available.
Any other questions from members? Representative Herr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Lesh, just a quick question. So I know that we define this as social media account, but and maybe that's not for us here to interpret that that's for the courts, but could there be potentially an issue of someone saying, like, a LinkedIn is not social media. That's a professional network. Are there are we concerned about any kind of, like, definition around that word?
Chair Lesh or Mr. Feist?
Okay. Well, you know what, Madam Chair, maybe we could just defer to research, the smart people. And just have them say, you know, whether or not LinkedIn should. I think the definition is pretty vague, but let's see what
Ms.
they
Ball.
Say.
Chair and members, the definition of social media account in the beginning of the bill is fairly broad. I think it would include a LinkedIn account and other kinds of accounts similar to that.
Any other questions from members? Does anyone from the audience wish to testify on House File 1196? Oh, Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, just to clarify, your intent is that LinkedIn would be covered?
Madam Chair, Chair Johnson, yes, LinkedIn should be covered.
All right, anybody else from the audience that wishes to testify in House File 1196? All right, doesn't look like there's any further discussion of the bill, so hearing none, Chair Lesh's bill, House File 1196, is laid over for possible inclusion in the data practices omnibus bill.
Representative Winkler, support.
Representative Winkler, welcome to the committee. We have up for consideration House File 1500, driver's license or identification card requirements modified and related changes made. I move that Majority Leader Winkler's bill, House File 1500, be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to bring to the committee's attention and the public's attention as well. Well, the committee already knows it, but House File 1500 was memoed this morning to the judiciary about 9:08. And shortly after that, the first engrossment was posted online. And we didn't have the new language before. We didn't have the new language before us until this morning. And the amendment that was posted over the weekend was posted to the new engrossment, which we didn't have. And so we've had less than about 8 hours to try to consume the new engrossment and the amendment as it applies to the new engrossment. And I'm just wondering how members, you know, we're all busy during the day. I had 15 minutes to eat lunch, and that was about it for downtime today. And I just think it's not considerate of the members of the committee and of the general public to be taking this bill up 8 short hours after we had all the information that we needed.
Well, thank you, Chair Scott. I would note that we did it was my decision to waive the requirements for this. That also included the waiving of any amendments to amendments. if you had those. And this bill also already had a full hearing in what was it, transportation, and it's going to Ways and Means after this. So I appreciate what you're saying, Chair Scott. This we don't do this that often, but we did it for this bill, so I don't have much more that I can offer you on that. Chair Scott.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Will this bill be eventually going to government operations since it deals with elections?
Chair Scott, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Winkler, you have an A4 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Chair Johnson.
Chair Lash, I also have some concerns about how the process is going and how fast things, especially this bill, is moving through this session. Although we learned last week we're going to be hearing it, as Representative Scott mentioned, we didn't have this information until this morning. I was out of town this weekend, and Saturday morning, I printed everything out to bring with me, only to find out when I got to my destination, I had some time before the event I was going to be at, to start going through the things. And to find out, I don't even have the proper stuff and the bill to even look at it, and trying to find out, have the original bill and have the amendment that was added, and trying to go through between paper and the computer and trying to line things up. And I'm also concerned about the transparency. How is the public going to hear what's going on and see what's going on when they have so little time, 8 hours from the time it's posted, to actually see what's in the bill to get here if they have any concerns about this bill? And I also noticed that this bill is scheduled for Ways and Means tomorrow as well, less than 24 hours from now. So that concerns me about how this process is going on. And the fact that there is no Senate companion, as last time I checked earlier this morning. And so with that, I'm going to make a motion to table this bill until we have proper time to digest what all the changes were and what the amendments do. And I'm going to request a roll call.
Chair Johnson has made the motion to table the bill and requested a roll call. Go ahead and get ready. Any discussion? Yeah, that's true. It's non-debatable. Forget what I said. There's no discussion. As soon as you're ready, go ahead, and committee legislative assistant will take the roll.
Chair Lesh?
No.
Representative Mueller?
No.
Representative Scott?
Yes.
Representative Barr?
Yes.
Representative Cantrell?
No.
Representative Carlson?
No.
Representative Considine?
No.
Representative Grossel?
Yes.
Representative Hassan?
No.
Representative Herr?
No.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Leland?
No.
Representative Lucero?
Yes.
Representative Mariani? Representative Noor?
No.
Representative O'Neill?
Yes.
Representative Robbins?
Yes.
Representative Zhang?
No.
Seven ayes, 10 nays. The motion does not prevail. Chair Johnson. You didn't have anything else?
I have nothing else at this time.
Thank you.
Chair
Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just also wanted to add that I noticed that today a bill, House File 554, was posted to be heard tomorrow, and that, too, is within less than 24 hours of the hearing tomorrow as well.
Okay, go ahead, Chair Scott.
And Mr. Chair, we were just, first of all, are you willing to waive any the amendment time? And then secondly, just would ask for consideration to let us know if you're planning to do that in the future, to delay or to move bills ahead, and just give us a heads up, and we're probably more than happy to accommodate, but a heads up would be appreciated. Thank you,
Fair
Mr.
enough,
Chair.
Chair Scott. Thank you. Representative Winkler has the A4 amendment. Is there someone who's going to offer the A4 amendment? Representative Cantrell moves the A4 amendment. Any discussion to get the bill in the shape the author so desires? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion passes. The A4 amendment is adopted. Representative Winkler, please tell us about the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I do appreciate the flexibility in considering this bill. It has a lot of committee stops to make it through. And time, as you know, is drawing short before deadline. So it is important that we get it heard. House File 1500 is the Freedom to Drive bill. And this bill, in short, permits a pathway for people to demonstrate that they are Minnesota residents and able to drive safely and have insurance in order to get a driver's license. This returns us to the time before 2003 when immigration status was not necessary in order to get a driver's license in Minnesota. I'm happy to go through the bill as a whole, Mr. Chair, but you may be more interested in the data practices provisions of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. That is accurate, and considering we had a full vetting in transportation, that is my intention to restrict it to that portion of the bill, restrict committee discussion on that.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, when I present the bill, I'll try to focus on that. I want to acknowledge Representative Gomez as the second author on the bill. And we are not here alone. There is a tremendous coalition of organizations and individuals who are very much committed to this bill. Unions, immigration rights advocates, community-based groups, immigrant-led collectives, organizations of people of color. There is a broad spectrum. And in your packets today, I believe there is a letter of support from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce for House File 1500. We have support from the AgriGrowth Council, support from Hospitality Minnesota, support from the Minnesota Catholic Conference, and a number of folks in law enforcement are supportive of this bill as well. The reason this bill is important are threefold. Number one, for the people affected by a broken immigration system, they need to be able to live their lives while the federal government takes its very slow approach to figuring this out. Back in 2003, when the rules were changed to require a status check before getting any kind of driver's license, I don't think anybody had in mind that it would be 16 years with still no comprehensive immigration reform in sight. And so while we think of people here without status as people who came here without any intention of having status when they arrived, and that may be how some think of it, there are many Minnesotans who are caught in a broken immigration system. One example are Liberian Americans who live, the largest population of Liberians outside of Liberia are in Minnesota, in the Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center area. They have lived here under temporary protective status for 26 years. So the federal government has basically said, you are allowed to live in the United States, and they've done that for 26 years. On March 31st of this year, that status is being revoked officially. And so the people who have made their lives in Minnesota through a fairly arbitrary change of policy at the federal government level are left without status. And so as it pertains specifically to a driver's license, that means that they will not have the ability to continue living their lives and driving around the state of Minnesota when their driver's license expires. And so, Mr. Chair, it's just one small example of the many, many, many ways that people who are just going about their daily lives, trying to live, provide for their families, and create some opportunity in this country, are caught up in a system that fails them and it fails us. That is why there is support from law enforcement, because of the public safety aspect of this, so that people can pass a driver's test and have insurance. That is why there is support from business groups, because we all know that our economy depends on immigrant workers. Whether we acknowledge it or not, many of the businesses that we all frequent and the people who provide food and a whole range of things are dependent on immigrant workers. And we are asking them to do that work for us, but to do so without the ability to drive to and from work. And that is why, finally, Mr. Chair, there is a very strong support for this bill from faith organizations, because they recognize the inhumanity of our immigration system. And so, Mr. Chair, I hope that we can come to an understanding in Minnesota this year that a failure of the federal government to enact an immigration system that works for anyone. Right now it works for nobody. And their failure to take an action is leaving many Minnesotans in a very difficult position. It's leaving employers in a difficult position. It's certainly leaving immigrants in a difficult position. And this bill is one thing that the state of Minnesota can do to make their lives possible and reasonable in this state, and I would urge your support. So that's the broad policy goals of the bill. With respect to data practices, pages 10 and 11 are the primary areas where that is affected. And basically, Mr. Chair, the goal of the language is to ensure that when people apply for a driver's license under this system, that the information that they provide to the Department of Public Safety will not be used as a basis for targeting them for adverse immigration action, deportation, or discrimination. That is the whole purpose of the bill as amended. There is a civil penalty for discrimination as well as for using data improperly. And, Mr. Chair, that is the primary purpose for the bill being in this committee. I know that there are a number of testifiers here today, and I would ask members consideration of that testimony. I think, finally, Mr. Chair and members, this issue is not going to go away. At one point in time, we are going to resolve this in Minnesota, and there is no reason to delay it any longer. It has been 16 years, and it is finally time for us to help bring people out of the shadows and into the full, as much as we can, into full membership in our community, and I would ask your favorable consideration.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for being here, and thanks also to all of the supporters and community who have been working on this, as Representative Winkler mentioned, for 16 years. I guess I just, you know, want to keep it brief, but, you know, to the purview of this committee, I just want to underline, you know, that the public safety goals that Representative Winkler outlined, which are about ensuring that folks who are driving cars on our streets have proven that they, you know, have taken a test, have showed that they have the skills and the knowledge of the law necessary to drive safely, and that they have access to insurance. All of that rests on top of a strong protection of their data and assurances that it will not be used for purposes other than confirming that they have the ability to drive safely and legally in our state. And so this, the data practices provisions in the bill really just kind of provide that bedrock that will give people in the community the confidence to participate fully in this program, to go to take those tests and to drive safely on our streets. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gomez, Ms. Gomez. We have other testifiers who are going to come forward. Is that accurate as well? Representative Grassl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Winkler or Gomez, whichever one of you wants to answer this. You're talking about this security for data and such. Do we give the same security to every other Minnesotan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Grassl, there is a federal act which sets a minimum standard for driver's license data protection. Minnesota has enacted essentially that federal standard for all driver's license applicants. The purpose of adding this language is because in Vermont, which has a similar program, there was a lawsuit after some data was disclosed because there was a lack of clarity about whether it could be shared or not, and so we're making sure that our laws are very clear that it cannot be shared to avoid that kind of issue coming up again.
Representative Grassl.
So I guess help me to understand this, if you would, please, that if I were doing a criminal investigation, I couldn't get information about anyone on this type of license?
Did you want to answer that, Representative Winkler?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Grassl, you would not be able to get access to information related to immigration status only.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you. So, Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as I'm looking at this here, as I'm reading, it's page 10, looking at lines 11.5 through 11.8. Am I understanding this correctly? I guess the question would be to the bill author, Mr. Chair. Am I understanding this correctly, then, that not only does this deal with not other areas of government using this information to enforce the law, but this section is speaking about if there's a private business or any other use of a non-compliant driver's license, that that private business, if they themselves strongly believe in following the law and desire not to use that driver's license or non-compliant driver's license for whatever purpose that private business might be in, that they would be considered discriminatory if they chose not to use that non-compliant driver's license, but instead their strongly held belief to enforce the law.
So just before you answer that, Representative Winkler, Representative Lucero, the data portion is Section 5, and the civil penalties are Section 7 that apply to the data section. Section 6 is just tucked in there, and it was not the intention that we were going to go into that in this committee. However, it is there, and you asked a question, so I'll permit latitude at this point if you want to answer that. But go ahead, Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lucero, Section 6 is the language makes clear that it is that solely based on the use of the license or the application for it is not a basis for discrimination, and that it would be, and discrimination based on that would be prohibited. So it's merely the license itself, which is, you know, and the concern would be that people use that license as a proxy for saying you are not documented and you therefore can't come into my retail store and buy things here. You can't come into my liquor store because you have that kind of license. That's what this addresses. It does not address a situation in which an employer is verifying employment and the status check required in order to be employed.
Representative Lucero?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then I will go to Section 5, I think it is, right? Section 5. Is there another example as I'm reading this? Is there another, so this is creating Minnesota statute, if it were to become law, creating Minnesota statute that directs not to cooperate or follow the law with other areas of government, whether it be the state or federal areas. Is there any other example in Minnesota law? Is there a precedent for creating statute directing not to follow the law or cooperate?
Well, Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lucero, I don't know whether there are other state statutes that prohibit the dissemination of data related to immigration status to law enforcement agencies at the statute level. I know a number of local municipalities have taken the position that their public safety interests are best served by not sharing that information, but I don't know whether that is true at the state level or not.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Lesh, Representative Winkler, and my question also dealt with that issue, that first issue and that Representative Lucero brought up. But you're saying that it was just dealt with how you're buying something or that way, and not as far as employment. Because if a person uses this license for identification while applying for a job, he would be disqualified for the job under federal law. Because under federal law, any employer that hires an undocumented person, as soon as they find out, they have to terminate that employment immediately or face federal charges and possibly civil fines. So I think we got to be careful how we do this, because we can actually make it so these people cannot be hired.
Oh, Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I think what you're pointing to is kind of the unspoken hypocrisy of our immigration system, that everybody knows that immigrants are employed without status and that everybody benefits from that in our economy, and that employers, whether they don't know or whether they choose not to know, often make these hiring decisions. And the point of this language is to ensure that merely getting a driver's license on its own is not a basis for making that decision. Now, as this driver's license is fully rolled out, this will be for all Class D licenses. So this has nothing to do with a real ID or an enhanced ID or enhanced driver's license. This is merely for people who do not choose to have a real ID or enhanced ID. They will not be asked for immigration status. So this protection will ensure that just having this kind of license alone will not be the basis for a discrimination, or is, prohibits discrimination based on that. Employers still have that same obligation. If they have reason to know that the person applying for work or who is employed by them does not have status allowing them to work, they are not allowed to hire them. That's correct. But that would not be discrimination under Minnesota law.
Chair Johnson? Okay. Members, I did want to point out that this has been brought up multiple times in recent years, most recently with passage of medical marijuana that runs flies in the face of federal law as well, including other states that pass it. So we do a lot of things around here that the feds say we can't do. That said, are there any other testifiers? I believe we have other testifiers who are ready to come down and speak to this. Oh, first, Commissioner Lucero. Is Commissioner Lucero here? Come on down, Commissioner. We always love having you in this committee. And then on deck is Sheriff Hutchinson. It just says Sheriff Hutch on here, but I'm pretty sure his full name is Sheriff Hutchinson.
We will find out, Mr. Chair.
We'll find out pretty soon, won't we, on the record. Commissioner, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Good evening. Hi, everyone. It's great to be here this evening. My name is Rebecca Lucero. I am the commissioner of the Minnesota Human Rights Department, and I enjoy coming before you guys again so quickly, especially on such an important topic as this. So now the goal of the Department of Human Rights, is to build a strong and thriving Minnesota by ensuring that all people can live joyful lives with dignity, free from discrimination. You've heard me talk about this already a few times. We know that Minnesota has become and will continue to become much more diverse, not just in terms of race, but in terms of national origin, in terms of age, in terms of disabilities, in religion and sexual orientation, and in many other ways. We want to build a state where our laws and systems lift up our beautiful and complex identities, not hold them down. As Governor Walz has so often said, if Washington won't lead, Minnesota will. We have the opportunity right now, tonight, to recognize that America has an immigration system that is not working. Both Democrats and Republicans agree, across the state and across the country, Democrats and Republicans agree, there needs to be change. In Minnesota, passing this bill is a step to begin to address some of the consequences of the federal government's failure to act. It's just a step. As you've heard me talk about, I was born and raised in New Mexico. This Minnesota is my home, but I was born there, and that's one of the many reasons why this bill is so personal to me. It's personal to me because I grew up with so many community members and family around me who needed driver's license to get to work and didn't have access to them as such. It's important for you to know that New Mexico recently adopted similar legislation to what is being considered here tonight. And when this law was passed, New Mexico saw a 24% drop in uninsured drivers, ensuring safer roads for everyone. The law also had other positive effects that I think are the most important. It acknowledged the dignity each person already carries with them every day. This is why I sit before you today, to express the administration's support and continued desire to work together with advocates, with stakeholders, and legislators on this issue, as has been done for the past 16 years. We know there are folks across Minnesota who don't have access to driver's license. This means that community members are living in fear instead of going to watch their kids play soccer. They're choosing to stay home instead of going to church. They're living in the shadows, and at the end of the day, we are all Minnesotans, every single one of us. And one of our greatest strengths as a state comes from our ability to be there for each other. Right now on this issue, we are not living up to our values, and tonight you have the opportunity to choose to do different, to do better, and I hope you will. Chair Lesh and members of the committee, I look forward to continuing the conversation Representative Winkler and the rest of the community brings to us yet again. Thank you, and I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Lucero. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we could take a look at Section 7, which is on page 11, and that's 11.11 through 11.17. As I'm reading through this, I'm a little bit confused. To me, it reads like we are actually adding a person who is here in this country as an immigrant, that they're here illegally, because that was part of the conversation. They could be here legally, but they could also be here illegally, are now actually a protected class in Minnesota. Would that be an accurate understanding of this section? Because you also have a $10,000 civil penalty for not following these conditions. Can you just speak to that? Am I misunderstanding this part?
Commissioner Lucero.
Chair Lesh, Representative, that's correct. You're misunderstanding that portion. So that is not correct, to be very clear. This provision is laying out that when you use this driver's license as a way to make a decision about somebody's immigration status, that presents a prima facie case of evidence about their national origin that can be used when we do when we're looking at these kind of situations. It is not creating a new or a new class or a new protected class. It's just providing a way to look at it. And I wonder if you might have some more information on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, no, it does not create a new protected class. It merely says that a driver's license can't be used as a basis for making a discriminatory decision.
Correct. Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. So then can you explain why the fee, or the fine, excuse me, is $10,000? Because that's, you know, if I understand the human rights statutes correctly, it's very strong. And it does have a long list of protected classes, and the power that your office holds, your agency holds, is actually very large, and you can weigh quite a bit for penalties and different things for a business that's not non-compliant. So can you just explain the $10,000 fine? That seems like an awfully high fine. If we're not actually adding an immigrant who's here with an illegal status to the protected class, then why the $10,000 civil fine?
Commissioner Lucero.
Representative Lesh, I'm actually going to defer to the people who wrote this bill to give an explanation for that specific number. Absolutely. I know that ultimately we want to make sure that we aren't using this as evidence against anyone for discrimination. So that's fundamentally what this is getting at.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, I don't know how exactly the $10,000 number was arrived at. I think under the purview of this committee are issues related to that. If you think there's a more appropriate a dollar amount, certainly I would be open to that conversation and would want to understand the basis for it. But you raise a good question. I don't know off the top of my head. I'm sure there's somebody in the audience who could say exactly why that number was picked, but we worked very carefully with House Research at putting this bill together.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Neill, I would note that in regulatory compliance measures for state agencies, $10,000 is not an uncommon up-to amount. Rarely is it maxed out, if I've ever seen, but it's just not uncommon. Go ahead, Rep. Somedeo.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to understand what exactly this section is doing. It just seems like $10,000 is a pretty large amount if they, in fact, are not actually a protected class. And so I'm just trying to understand what exactly we're doing, because I understand the part about giving someone a driver's license, but this is, to me, it seems like it's beyond the scope when you're talking about such a heavy penalty for someone that doesn't comply, and in particular when you are attaching on the human rights statutes, which are very strong, very powerful, very some have even characterized it as heavy-handed. I don't know that I would, but I've heard that characterization. So when you're putting things into the human rights statute and you have a penalty that is as high as $10,000, this becomes a different conversation, Representative Winkler. That's why I was confused, because when I saw the number and understand that this is actually written into the human rights statutes, it's like, well, then they must be considered a protected class now, because there are other indicators here that would kind of lead me in that direction. So, you know, maybe you could just, I know sometimes when we just talk about author's intent, is it the intent to be so strong, let's just say, with a penalty to make sure that this data is not shared?
Well, Representative O'Neill, before Representative Winkler answers, I would note that the data, this committee's jurisdiction is data privacy, and the Data Practices Act has penalties of up to $2,000 a pop per violation, and the state has paid out tens of millions for violations of that over the course of the last 5 years, and I would argue that $2,000 probably isn't enough because we keep violating it. But that said, go ahead, Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, I think you should also, just to be clear, national origin discrimination is already a protected class. What this language does is create a standard that this is prima facie evidence if you use it based on this driver's license. So we're not talking about whether this group of people are in this class. They already are. And the data protections are consistent. So the $10,000 provides a civil fine primarily for the data protection, but also for violations of the Human Rights Act related to it. And I don't know that $10,000 changes the conversation. I think it is important to have a very strong penalty potentially in place because, for example, if a person were to intentionally violate the law and share information that they weren't allowed to share for this express purpose of targeting a group of individuals, I think a strong penalty would be in order.
So, Neil, thank you, Mr.
We've got four more people on the list after you, and go ahead.
Just a final comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just want to be clear that we're talking about what the full bill does. I know that in your intro you talked about you know, providing driver's licenses for someone that's here as an immigrant and they're here with an illegal status or about to be illegal status, as you had said, with the Liberians. And I just think that it's important to understand the full bill. And we are here to talk about the data privacy and the putting it in the human rights statute. So I just think it's important to have that full conversation. And, you know, you had said something about the fact that some cities have already enacted something like this. Are you talking about like the sanctuary cities? Is that what you're referring to? And are you moving towards Minnesota being a sanctuary state? Is that what this is moving towards, or am I misunderstanding that?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, I personally would move Minnesota in that direction, but that's not what this bill does. What I was referring to, you might call it a sanctuary ordinance or a separation ordinance, and the idea being that local police officers are not immigration agents. They are focused on protecting the public in their city. And so the question to me was whether or not we have other examples or places in state statute in which we separate out certain data and keep it from law enforcement agencies. And my answer was I don't know if we do or not. And I was giving an analogy at the local level that some choose to do that in order to protect their local public safety. So some call it a sanctuary city. Others call it a separation ordinance. But it is an example of that kind.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Johnson.
Chair, Representative Winkler, I also have a concern on that $10,000 for a fine. If my data, driver's license information is leaked, Representative Mariani or Chair Mariani's is leaked, your information is leaked, any one of our members in here as a resident of Minnesota, that's a $2,500 fine by statute. But in your bill, you're giving somebody the civil penalty four times the amount that any citizen of Minnesota would be fined for the fine for leaking their information. That concerns me because it's as Representative O'Neill said, giving the driver's license as a protected class to somebody who is not a citizen of this state. And it just really makes me wonder.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I would just like to point out that as this bill is crafted, it's anybody who has this kind of license, regardless of whether they are of their immigration status. So it will protect everyone.
Okay, thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, if you wanted to move this to $2,500 and could round up votes on your side for the bill, I might consider it.
Representative Drossel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Representative Winkler, as far as local law enforcement officers go, as a former law enforcement officer myself, I continuously worked with many federal agencies, U.S. Marshals, Border Patrol, FBI, DEA, all of them. And we always had open communications. It's important. It's like you said, for public safety, it is important to always have those avenues open to share information and to work together. This appears to be a stumbling block that would hinder local law enforcement from doing their jobs efficiently and effectively for public safety purposes. And the more I look at it and the fine as well, you know, people are here illegally to begin with. And with a fine like that, I mean, that it really appears that they have more protections than a U.S. citizen. From what the type of fine that you're wanting to levy against someone who, in the course of their duties, may be cooperating with the federal agency.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Winkler.
Representative Grossel, I think it's important to note that the only information that is protected is that the individual applied for was denied or was issued a non-compliant driver's license. So there is no prohibition on sharing information related to any other kind of activity. And as I said before, this driver's license would not just be for, and we went over this more in the Transportation Committee, this driver's license is not just for people who are in the United States without status. It would apply to green card holders. It would apply to citizens who chose this path. And so this protection is for everyone. But the reality is, I mean, you may disagree with the policy and the whole goal of this bill. You may think that we should not provide these driver's licenses at all. But if we are going to provide them, as I think we should, we need to make sure that the people who would have access to them have their information protected, or they will not come forward to do it. And so that's why this bill is structured this way.
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm a little bit confused, and I thought this bill read, so let me back up to the Real ID discussion and the fact that we have Real ID compliant and non-compliant licenses that we're going to be issuing. So if I do not wish to get a Real ID, a compliant ID, I'm going to get a non-compliant ID. So is this the same as what this is? So the back of my card, if I get the back of my driver's license, if I get a non-compliant ID, is going to say not good for voting on the back?
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, if you demonstrate citizenship in applying for your driver's license, your driver's license card would not say not for voting.
Okay. Mr. Chair, thank you. I would like to make an oral amendment, and it's on line 6.29. I'm sorry, 6.30. And it has to do with the language for not for voting. And I was going to just say, you know, put it on the back in a certain font level. But I think it's really important to strike the word back and put front there. And the reason for that is this is something new. We're going to have a $10,000 fine for people in violation if they don't handle these cards, if they don't handle these licenses properly. And I think for law enforcement purposes as well, I think it's really important to have not for voting on the front side of the card. I think it should be in red, and I think it should be at least like a 16-point font. And so that would be my oral amendment, that it would be on the back side or on the front side of the card in red in 16-point font.
Chair Scott moves that on line 6.30 we strike back and insert front. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. No. Motion does not prevail. Chair Scott.
Well, members, I hope that you'll I'd like to offer another amendment then, Mr. Chair.
Well, we're not even in this section of the bill, Chair Scott. I permitted a certain measure of latitude on that one.
But I think this is important, Mr. Chair. I mean, we're talking about civil penalties of $10,000 if they don't understand these driver's licenses when they see them.
Chair Scott, tell me what your Second Amendment is.
My Second Amendment is to put on the back in 16-point font in red, not for voting. If you look at the back of your driver's license right now, members, it's very small font. And most people aren't accustomed to looking back there unless it's for, if you're restricted for your corrective lenses or whatever.
Scott, here's the deal. I'll permit that oral amendment. We can vote on it now. We have a long list of testifiers who are here to testify, and I do want to get to them. We have Representative Lucero after you. We're going to take the oral amendment, and we'll vote on it, and then we'll move to Representative Lucero, and immediately after that, we're going to move to testimony from the public, folks who are here to state it. But I need you to state your amendment specifically on which line and what words.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So after not for voting, so after the word side on line 6.30, we would be adding in 24-point red font. I'm sorry, 16. Yes, yeah, sorry. In 16-point red font.
Chair Scott moves that on line 6.30, after the word side, insert the words in 16-point red font. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the bill author, then, from the discussion of Representative O'Neill brought up, so the $10,000 fine, then I'm looking at a line 11.24, is prima facie evidence of national origin discrimination if the activity that includes, and it refers up to subdivision 13, I believe, and that would be presents, looking at a line 11.7, presents a non-compliant driver's license or identification. So just going back to my earlier question, I guess my question was not, the intent was not an employment context, but it was more the use of a non-compliant driver's license, so presenting it, and then the if a private sector employer, and I'm just looking, mulling over my mind the scenarios where a license would be presented, such as renting a hotel room. So would a hotel or motel room who's had a non-compliant driver's license presented to them decide based on that it is their strongly held belief to follow the law, and then they choose not to allow for the staying in that night in the hotel? Or another application would be buying tobacco. If somebody wanted to buy tobacco or alcohol and they were presented with this, if the private sector business owner chose not to do business, if I'm reading this correctly, that is considered prima facie evidence of national origin discrimination. And then they would be subject to a fine up to $10,000. Am I reading this correct?
Well, go ahead, Ripson Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lucero, you are reading it correctly.
Okay, then a follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Prima facie case merely means it's a threshold showing. It doesn't mean that they've proven anything. You still need to prove it. There are still our rebuttal presumptions. Go ahead.
Okay, so I appreciate that. Then, my second question is based on what Chair Scott, or Representative Scott just brought up. So, under Real ID compliant, there's a misnomer. There's Real ID compliant where you've provided, and there's also, it's Real ID compliant, but it's called non-compliant, but you're still having to comply, and it says non-compliant. This is providing a third option, then, if this were to become law, where it's neither of those, it's not compliant at all with either of the Real ID flavors, if you want to say it that way. Could I then, as a citizen, obtain this non-compliant driver's license, but then I would still use my passport, which is one of the 15 documents that I could still fly with, and then I could use one of the other options available to me for voting, right? There's a whole plethora of options there. Am I allowed then as a citizen to get this non-compliant driver's license for the express purpose then of trying to avoid and keep myself out of the Real ID system altogether?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lucero, the answer is yes, and it sounds like you're warming up to a support of the bill.
We've got Sheriff Hutchinson, Michelle Rivero, Isabella, someone with the first name Isabella, Darren Macbeth, Gustavo Rivera, and Gloria Gonzalez. These are the line that we're going to be calling off then. So come on up, first one I stated, Sheriff Hutchinson. And then on deck, we have Michelle Rivero. Welcome to the committee, Sheriff Hutchinson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for having me. As a sheriff in Hampton County, my primary responsibility is public safety and to keep people safe that are in Hampton County. I know from my experience as a police officer that our roads are safest when people are driving cars who are trained, who have taken a test, and who are licensed and also insured. The bill helps to ensure that people who are driving the roads meet these requirements. I'm a member of the Major County Sheriff's Association. 2 weeks ago in D.C., we discussed this a little bit. So I've had the opportunity to speak to about these laws to sheriffs in 12 states that allow immigrants to get licensed and some other states that don't. Law enforcement of states that don't have driver's license for all have less recourse against those who are not safe drivers. This is because these drivers have less identification and there is no way to record their traffic infractions. The consensus of law enforcement in those states that train, test, license...
One minute, Sheriff.
We're done.
Oh, sorry. Okay, he's going to wait till you're done. Go ahead, Sheriff.
And ensure people are driving on the roads feel that they're safer. These drivers are better trained, have better identification, and most importantly, they have insurance. That's very important for our safety. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Sheriff Hutchinson. Sheriff Considine.
Thank you, Chair Lesh. Sheriff, in your opinion, would this not also contribute to public safety in that the officer at the stop would know for sure who they are talking to?
Sheriff Hutchinson.
Chair, member, representative, what was your question? Let's repeat it.
When an officer stops somebody, if they had this license, they would be sure that they knew who they were talking to because they had have gone through the process. Therefore, the officer would have more confidence in who they were talking to and therefore contribute to public safety.
Sheriff Hutchinson.
Chair and representative, yes, I believe so.
Thank you. Other questions for Sheriff Hutchinson? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Michelle Rivero. Is Michelle Rivero in the room? Oh, here we go. And then after that on deck is Isabella Alicia.
Okay. Hello, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Yep, my name is Michelle Rivero. I'm with the Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs for the City of Minneapolis. The Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs has been in existence for 8 months. It's a new office, and I'm here to speak in support of this bill. The City of Minneapolis strongly feels that this is a bill that will benefit immigrant and refugee communities. The purpose of my office is basically to support immigrant and refugee communities and ensure their safety and security. We do believe that this bill represents an opportunity to ensure public safety, to ensure that people are identified, have an access to an identity document. It's something that is a benefit not only to immigrants and refugees, individuals who are undocumented, individuals who are documented, but also municipalities and the state of Minnesota as a whole. Because having identified individuals does promote public safety. I can speak to the belief that there is no impact from the standpoint of the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act, and I am happy to answer any questions that committee members may have. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Rivera. Any questions for Ms. Rivera? Thank you very much for coming down and testifying. Isabella, I think it's Alicia on here. Oh, here you go. Welcome. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the committee.
Hello, chair members, representatives. My name is Isabella Alesna. I'm here on behalf of the Asian American Organizing Project in Release Minnesota 8, and I'm a supporter of driver's license, but I'm actually here to share a story and a testimony on behalf of Henry Aoki, a young person from St. Paul, a supporter of driver's license and all the data protections that come with it. So, from Henry, my apologies for not being here tonight. My name is Henry Aoki, and I am a Yonsei, fourth-generation Japanese-American. It is on behalf of my family, my grandparents, and my great-grandparents that I send in this testimony. On March 27, 1942, Lieutenant General John L. DeWitt issued a proclamation prohibiting all people of Japanese ancestry from leaving the Pacific Coast. My grandmother, not even 18, was imprisoned with her family at Namache, also known as Granada. My grandfather was imprisoned with most of his family at Miniroka, but his father, my great-grandfather, was forcibly separated from them. My great-grandfather eventually was allowed to rejoin his family in imprisonment, but never spoke of what he endured. How did this injustice occur? On the same day that General DeWitt prohibited my family from fleeing the coast, Congress passed the Second War Powers Act. It empowered the Census Bureau to provide data to various agencies, including the FBI. Not just block data, but names and addresses specific to Japanese Americans. As a result, the imprisonment of my family and so many others was carried out with technical precision. Data ensured that no one was overlooked for injustice. Data ensured that my folks, my great-grandfathers, were singled out for separation. We all have a right to privacy. My family had a right to privacy and for their data to be protected from government abuse. But rights are easily trampled by the absence of law. We live in an age where a person cannot engage in society without having their life stamped into data. One cannot drive a car in the winter without first surrendering the data. Yet we still live in an era where parents are separated from their children. We cannot allow driver's licenses records to become the next tool for incarceration. Please protect our family and protect our data. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Lesna. Any questions from the committee for Ms. Lesna? Thank you. Next person we have coming down is Gustavo Rivera and Gloria Gonzalez. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and honorable members of the committee. My name is Gustavo Rivera. I am 43 years old, and I live in Minnesota since 1996. I am married and I have three citizen children. On April 4, 2012, I opened a small used car company here in St. Paul. The reason that I opened my company was to be able to support my community in navigating the brochures and buying and selling cars with my clients in their own language and explain to them step by step, you know, clauses in Spanish, the goal for them to feel safe in the purchases. So last October 31st, 2018, I was notified by the Department of Motor Vehicles located on the second floor of Sears store. The dealers, we cannot longer sell or transfer titles, you know, to whoever holds a consulate, document, or passport. 90% of my clients are from Hispanic immigrant community. When I heard this, I know that I have a big problem. So we, you know, we cannot longer make or sell to our community and those who didn't have a driver license or ID from the United States. So the state of Minnesota will be obtain revenue because we are possible 95,000 affected now. For the Class D license, the regular cost is $25.25. So that means 95,000 divided by $25.25, so equals $2,398,750, only to obtain driver licenses. Now, as an administration, we will take a car value of $3,000 or more. The state will receive 6.5% for each transaction. So this will generate to the state $236.35. So multiply by 95,000, and you get $22,491,250. So if we keep an illustration, prices the cars are under $3,000 to change ownership or titles or place with government, they still will collect $96.79 for each transaction. So if we multiply for 96,000 of us, we have a potential revenue collection of $9,995,050. So if you guys imagine the value of the vehicles are more than $3,000, the state revenue will be radical increase because the state will be charged more and more for car worth $10,000 or $20,000. So this is just an example, and this without counting the public safety on the roads and jobs, car insurances, and all could be dramatically increased in our community. People who start, you know, will be starting small micro businesses if they have a driver licenses with an IT number, you know, individual task pay identification number. And people could become owners, small companies. so we will contribute to the economy growing the state of Minnesota. That's why, Mr. Chair and committee members, I ask that you guys vote in favor of the proposal of HF 1500. We want our license for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Rivera. Questions for Mr. Rivera from the committee? Thank you very much for joining us here.
Thank you.
Gloria Gonzalez. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members. With all of my respect, I will give my testimony in Spanish. I don't want to do any mistake. Mi nombre es Gloria González. Vivo en este país desde 1990. Empecé colectando aluminio en las calles para poder sobrevivir. Luego trabajé en varios negocios de comida rápida.
My name is Gloria González. I've been living in this country since 1999. I started collecting aluminum to survive, and then I work in different businesses of fast food.
And I'm sorry, but could I have the interpreter introduce yourself for the record as well, so we know
sure.
You're interpreting?
My name is Marva De Cantos. I'm the chair of the Human Rights Commission in Northfield and the director of Neighbors United in Rice County.
Thank you. Please proceed.
In 1997, se me presentó la oportunidad de venir a vivir a Minnesota, un estado maravilloso de muchas oportunidades.
It was in 1997 when I had the chance to come to the state, a land of opportunity and a wonderful place to live.
Se puede decir que aquí encontré lo que muchos inmigrantes buscamos, el sueño americano, the American Dream, a base de arduo trabajo, sacrificio y visión empresarial.
I can say that in Minnesota I found what many immigrants are looking for, the American Dream, and that was made out of a lot of sacrifice, a lot of hard work, and a lot of business vision.
En el 2001 se me presentó la oportunidad de ser vendedora de autos, trabajando para un dealer. Después de 7 años de ser empleada, compré el dealer donde trabajaba. Y así nace Gloria's Auto Sales.
In 2001, I found an opportunity to become a seller of a car dealership working for a car dealer. And after 7 years of working an employee at that dealership, I was able to buy the business, and that's how Gloria Auto Sales was born.
Inicié mi negocio con 5 autos. Hoy vendo cientos de autos al año. Me abrí camino como dueña de un dealer de autos, siendo una industria manejada totalmente por hombres. Soy la primera mujer latina en el negocio que ha permanecido y ha triunfado. De lo cual mi hija, ciudadana americana, se siente orgullosa y sigue el ejemplo de su madre.
I began the business with only 5 cars. Today, I sell hundreds of cars every year. I became the owner of a dealership of cars, being an industry, as you know, governed by men, mostly. I'm the first woman, Latina, that owns such a business, and I have sustained the business for years, and I have succeeded. My own daughter is very proud to see me succeed, and she's following the example of her mom.
Desde entonces llevo 18 años sirviendo en su mayoría a la comunidad latina. Hoy puedo decir que en todos estos años mi negocio ha aportado millones de dólares en impuestos, en ventas a la economía de este estado.
I've been working in this business for 18 years, serving mainly the Latino community here. I can say that after all these years, my business has brought a lot of millions of dollars in taxes because of the sale of the cars to the economy of this state.
Pero a partir de octubre, algo cambió. Ya no podemos vender un carro a los clientes que no tengan licencia o ID. Las ventas han decaído y como consecuencia no estamos recaudando las mismas cantidades en impuestos de venta. Es por eso el Estado está sufriendo.
Everything changed in October of 2018. After that, we couldn't sell cars to our clients that didn't have a driving license or ID. The sales have declined, and as a consequence, we're not making the same amount of money in taxes for the sales of the cars. Therefore, the state is suffering.
Por esta razón estoy hoy aquí para pedir que apoyen el proyecto de ley HF 1500. Honorables miembros de este comité, permitan ustedes que la comunidad latina pueda tener su licencia de conducir y así contribuir a engrandecer la economía de este estado y lograr carreteras seguras.
Is this the reason why I'm here in front of you, to ask all of you that you support this bill, 1,500? Honorable members of this committee, please allow the Latino community again to have driving licenses to drive, to contribute to the wonderful economy of this state and have safe roads.
Mi historia es un pequeño ejemplo de lo que realmente somos los inmigrantes en este país. Soy uno de muchos ejemplos de una comunidad honrada y trabajadora a la cual, si se le brinda la oportunidad de contribuir a la economía, es capaz de hacer grandes cosas.
My story is a small example of who we are really as immigrants in this country. I am one of many examples of this wonderful, honest, and hardworking community. I would like this opportunity to be granted to this community so we can contribute and keep contributing to the economy and do wonderful things.
Es por esto que les pido que voten en favor de la licencia de manejo para todos, que se pongan las manos en el corazón y nos traten con igualdad y respeto. Muchas gracias.
This is why I'm asking of you that you vote in favor of driving licenses for all, and that you put yourselves in the, with your hands and your heart in our shoes and treat us with equality. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Gonzalez. Questions from members of the committee for Ms. Gonzalez? Thank you. Thank you for coming up. We next have Pastor James Erlinson and on deck Pastor Mark Vinge. I'm sorry if I butchered that. How do you say it? Vinge? Vinge. Okay, we're good. Members, we got an email from leadership that they intend to reconvene floor session at 6:30. Please introduce yourself for the committee, Pastor Erlinson.
Thank you, Chairman Lesh and members of the committee. My name is James Erlinson, pastor of Lutheran Church of the Redeemer in St. Paul. I'm a leader in Isaiah, a multi-faith organization of over 100 congregations and mosques in Minnesota, and the Isaiah Sanctuary Network. I am the grandson of immigrants who came to Minnesota before 1900. My wife was a refugee from Cambodia who came to Minnesota in 1980. She was welcomed and became a citizen. Much of my life's work has been to help make refugees and immigrants welcome in our state and communities of faith, and to make sure that people who are vulnerable are not victimized, treated unjustly, or made to live in fear. Because it is a fact that when a person comes with their family or alone to live in a new and strange land, they have a lot to fear, especially today when many can be arrested or detained or deported because they do not have a driver's license or all the documents they need to live and work in the United States. My ministry and the work of many churches and mosques is guided by the following scriptures. And when an alien, foreigner, immigrant resides with you in your land, you shall not oppress the immigrant. The immigrant who resides with you shall be as to you as a citizen among you. You shall love the immigrant as yourself, for you were once immigrants in the land of Egypt. And Jesus said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself. And love does no wrong to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law. This bill being proposed, HF 1500, would make it possible for thousands of Minnesota residents to drive legally and safely without fear of arrest, just as they were allowed to do before 2003. This bill will make us all safer in our streets and highways. But for this to work, people have to be confident that the personal information they provide in order to drive safely is not shared with agencies or immigration enforcement. Article 2 in this bill includes rights and protections and discriminatory language so that information which immigrants give in their applications to drive doesn't get shared with consequences for individuals who break it. Such data protections are critical to make immigrants confident that they will be protected, permitted to drive and not targeted. For this to work, people cannot feel that they would be more at risk to drive legally with a license than to drive without one. For then they would remain vulnerable, living in fear, and just stay in the shadows. So we need this bill to help immigrants trust our justice system and to make our roads safer for all Minnesotans. This is how we welcome immigrants, who are our neighbors, co-workers, and friends, who bring so much of value to our state. This is how we stop doing wrong to our neighbors and make love the fulfillment of the law. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Pastor Erlinson. Questions for Pastor Erlinson? Representative Lucero.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So to the pastor, is it true that Christ said, I came not to do away with the law, but to fulfill the law, thereby implying or and making it definitively clear that there is a law and a process to follow, and that he does not want to do away with it, but instead to uphold it?
So I'm not sure which section of the bill that is, Representative Lucero. Okay. It's a rhetorical question, Pastor.
Mr. Chair, it's based on his testimony.
Go ahead and answer it if you want to.
I'd be happy to have a one-on-one conversation with you following this session, and we can discuss the theology of what I've said here. But
okay,
I'll stand with what Jesus said here.
Thank you. Representative Grossel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is just a quick question for the previous testifier, the lady sitting in the front there.
Why don't you go ahead and ask it?
Is she currently in the process of becoming a U.S. citizen?
I'm not going to allow any personal questions to be asked of individual status representative.
Just out of curiosity, sir.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other questions for Pastor Erlinson?
I have one, Mr. Chair.
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I hope that you'll allow a little latitude. Since the clergyman mentioned Scripture, I think it's appropriate to answer with Scripture. And so just briefly, I'd like to do that.
You feel free to answer.
So Romans 13:1 says, let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. To me, that's saying that we need to submit to the laws of the land. And so, yes, we can still submit to the laws of the land and love our neighbors. It's not impossible to do, Pastor. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We have next.
Mr. Chair, I didn't get to finish, if I may.
Representative Grossel.
The question was leading into another portion to where I've spoke to a refugee from Vietnam, and this person was had fled Vietnam, fled communism there, and they're very much against this bill, and my question was just, you know, if, and this individual now is a U.S. citizen, flourishing, and just like she was saying, her business was flourishing, and I was just going to encourage that go through the process. That was simply what it was.
Understood. Thank you, Representative Grossel. Pastor, I forgot our name. It's Vingy or Vingy? Vingy, thank you. Okay. Pastor Vingy. I'm sorry. Representative Hassan, did you have a question?
I just have a comment, but I can wait until then.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead. Please introduce yourself for the committee. Right. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm Pastor Mark Vingy, Senior Pastor at House of Hope Lutheran Church in New Hope, which is also a congregation in the Isaiah Sanctuary Network. And we also host a librarian congregation as well.
Thank you, Pastor Vingy. I went to Bible school at House of Hope. Even though it's Lutheran, the kids down the block were Lutheran.
Yeah.
I'm Catholic, but my mom made me go to Bible school with the Lutherans. Which was very, very irregular, but it was a great
place. Oh, wonderful. I get to go have Mass at St. Joseph's every once in a while.
Thank you. That's where I went. Go ahead, Pastor.
All right. Chair Lesh, members of the Judiciary Committee, and also Chair Carlson of the Ways and Means, it's good to be with you this evening. I would like to ask, how do you get your groceries? Or how do you get to work? Do you ever have to drive to pick up your children from school? For most Minnesotans, they need a car to live the life of a Minnesotan, to do all the things that Minnesotans love to do. For many of you, that it's almost unimaginable than to think of living here without the ability to drive. You need a driver's license. But if getting a license puts you at risk of deportation or being put in jail, again, separating parents from their children, that is going to be a deterrent. It's going to keep people in the shadows. There would need to be assurances that all the data that is collected is protected, as this bill supports to do, and not used against the applicants. How you treat the most vulnerable people says everything about your character, your morals, and whether you believe that all people are endowed with certain unalienable rights. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Pastor Benji. Representative Lucero?
Is driving a right or is it a privilege?
Well,
it's a part of life in Minnesota.
Okay.
That's my point.
Thank you. Any other questions for Pastor Vinji? Oh, Representative Hassan, you had.
I just have a comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank our majority leader, Ryan Wilkner, and Representative Gomez for bringing this legislation. It's an important legislation. I just want to, for the record, I would love my colleagues to use the word undocumented instead of illegal, because no one is illegal, and I've heard the term illegal tonight multiple times. That's for the record. This is an important legislation. It's not only the moral thing to do, but it's also the smart thing to do, and it's the safe thing to do. My family came to this country many years ago, running away from persecution. We were running away to get a new life without fear of being killed, raped, or starved to death. We came to this country. So as I sit here and listen to people talk about this, I was imagine when we arrived here, we were told, you can't drive, you can't work, and you have to hide from the law enforcement. That's basically what we are asking our neighbors, our community members to do. And there are 90,000 undocumented Minnesotans who are living in Minnesota who this legislation could free their lives. They could pick up their children from school. They could travel. They could move to Duluth and get a job there. So if you don't even care about morality, this is the smart thing for our economy and the right thing to do, because you want the person that's driving next to you to have a driver's license and an insurance in case there's an accident. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick.
Great. There will be no demonstrations in committee. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair. And this Representative Winkler and Representative Gomez, I just wanted to say thank you for bringing this legislation forward. I think that oftentimes we forget that this conversation is not one-dimensional. We forget that this legislation doesn't just impact one community group, that there are very many circumstances in which this will impact people. We have one of the largest Korean adoptee populations here in Minnesota, and that there are Korean adoptees whose parents never went through the paperwork of getting them to become legally adopted and to get their citizen paperwork. I mean, sorry, not legally adopted, but to get their citizen paperwork done. And those people are also having issues in getting documentation. My husband, who came here legally, his parents died when he was young, even though his parents became citizens when he was a child, and that we had trouble finding documentation in order for him to get his driver's license, to get a passport, that there are legitimate reasons in why people are here and somehow they lose their status. And so that for this is a broader conversation, and for us not to think about this as impacting just one community. There are large segments of people who came here, and for some one reason or another, they've lost their documentation. And so I just want to commend you for bringing this forward. And I wish that this actually legislation would go further, because I almost feel like, I've had experiences working at City Hall in which ICE agents were waiting for people to come to their hearings and detaining them there. I have concerns that ICE agents could be waiting at the DMV where somebody is applying for their application to see some of this. And I know that we can't control that and that we can't go that far in this legislation, but I almost wish that we could. So I just wanted to thank you that there's probably more we could do and that this conversation is much broader than just what we may be looking through in a very limited lens when we're thinking about who is undocumented here in this country. So I just want to say thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments, Representative Herr. We are on to committee discussion. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I was just thinking a little bit more about what Representative Winkler had said about national origin discrimination, and that was line 11.24. And I understand that national origin is a protected status, but and that's in there for a very, very good reason. But legal status, so your legal status is not a protected not a protected class under the Human Rights Act. And I think I was trying to get to more of that. And I get it. I understand that the national origin is there, but in line 11.24, you talk about evidence of national origin discrimination, but isn't it really legal status discrimination? Isn't that a more inaccurate depiction right there? Isn't that what we've been discussing?
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, national origin discrimination is already defined in the law. You have to prove it, and the fact that somebody would deny you access to a hotel room, as Representative Lucero earlier described, would meet your initial burden of proof, the prima facie evidence standard. So it doesn't create a new class. It simply offers a vehicle for demonstrating the discrimination.
Representative O'Neill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But so much of the conversation has been about, sharing data so that ICE, is aware of their legal status. But when I asked you about the legal status, like a protected class, because we're putting this in the Human Rights Act, you talked about national origin, but didn't really talk about that. Really, it's about legal status. And that's really what my question had been about earlier. And I realize you answered by talking about, nation of origin is, you can't ask about that, and that's a protected class. But really, we're talking about your legal status.
Mm-hmm.
Am I misunderstanding?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, we are in the bill talking about getting a driver's license without needing to demonstrate your legal status or your immigration status. You don't have to show that in order to get a license. And so what this bill does is to ensure that if you make an application and you get a driver's license that it does not require demonstration of legal status, and someone denies you public accommodation on the basis that you have that license alone, that is enough to get you a first round demonstration of national origin discrimination. It doesn't create a new class. It simply allows you to show that you have been discriminated against on the sole basis of having a license.
Representative O'Neill?
Just final comment. So I guess that's where I'm parsing this at, where I'm having a challenge because the license, we're creating this license for those that are here with, like you were talking about, the Liberians are about to lose their legal status, or others that here are here because of a lack of legal status. So we're creating a license for folks that can't get it any other way. And then you're creating civil penalties if someone uses that license and questions their legal status and somehow discriminates. But in the language, like I said, 11.24, you don't reference legal status. You reference the national origin discrimination. And so that's where I'm just saying this doesn't quite line up for me.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, I think what you're saying is, aren't we changing the definition of national origin by using this as evidence?
Yeah.
And my response is no, because you still have to, the case for discrimination still has to be made, and the other party can respond and provide different evidence of what's going on in that particular instance. So, no, it doesn't change the definition. It merely is describing a type of evidence to demonstrate it.
I'm sorry. But the type of evidence are two different things. Your nation of origin is very different than your legal status. They're two different things.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Representative.
Representative O'Neill, they are different things. And this, the fact that you have a license is merely a piece of evidence.
Any other questions?
In a claim. It is not, does not give you enable you to prevail on its own in a case. There is still a whole process to respond to demonstrate that it was not national origin discrimination.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm having a hard time with this, particularly back to the level of civil penalty when, you know, we're talking about the license itself, which may or may not be because you have a legal or not a legal status. I just think the language needs a little bit of cleanup before
it hits prime time here. Representative Grossman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's exactly what Representative Neal's looking at, is if you change that title to legal status discrimination versus national origin, because their national origin isn't the thing that's in question or that could be discriminated against according to what the purpose of this bill is, Representative, the legal status is the thing that you're trying to keep from being discriminated against, not their national origin.
Okay, did you want to, was that a statement?
Is that correct? I mean,
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Grossel, I think that in this context, the fact that you've applied for this kind of this would not only protect, I mean, this could protect people regardless of their status. So the point being, in order to get into the protected class of national origin discrimination, this is a piece of evidence that would allow you to get into that class. But think of it as a subset of, think of status as a subset of national origin.
Representative Grossel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I thought what this bill is supposed to do is to make sure that they're not discriminated against because of their legal status, not because of their national origin.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Grossel, that is correct, but we are not changing the definitions or creating a new protected class in the bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative, if you do this, I think that's what is going to happen, because you're putting national origin in there when that's not what you're trying to do. You're wanting to make sure that they're not discriminated against because of their legal status.
Thanks. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the bill author is choosing his words very carefully. He's correct that we're not adding as a protected class, we're not doing these things, but what we are doing is we're assuming, back to my scenario, that if the private business owner, the hotel owner, chooses to take action to not rent a room, the law is saying that they decided not to rent that room because of national origin, when the reality is the business owner made the choice and took the action based on legal status of their strongly held beliefs to follow the law. And I find it very, I mean, there's many things difficult with this bill, but one of, this is, since we're talking about this, I find it very difficult to put into law the assumption that a business owner acted based on discrimination of national origin, when in fact that's not the case. It may not be the case, and likely is not the case. And just thinking, a business owner, they have no idea what origin somebody's from. They're making the decision based on the card. So, Mr. Chair, I don't know when the vote is going to take place, but if the roll hasn't been called, I would ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been called for. Chair Scott.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I have a question on people that may be applying for these driver's licenses that may have, maybe they're on the federal deportation list because they've been found to be criminal since they've been here. Is there a way of checking, is there any sort of database that will be checked against when people apply for these driver's licenses?
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, I don't know about there would be no reason for the Department of Public Safety to check against a federal deportation list.
Chair Scott.
Mr. Chair, so in essence, the process that you're proposing here would not distinguish, there's no way of knowing whether people that apply for these driver's licenses are criminals, whether there's a warrant out for their arrest, or anything like that. We're just not going to know that.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, I guess I'm a little bit troubled by the notion that a group of people based on their immigration status should be subject to a criminal background check for a driver's license when nobody else would be. So we don't have a criminal background check for a driver's license under state law right now. And so by adding to the category of people who can get a driver's license, we wouldn't be adding a new step of investigation.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Well, there's a little bit of a difference there because we don't know who some of these people are. I mean, these people, we could have terrorists living among us. And don't laugh, people. I don't think that's funny. There are people here in this country that we don't know who they are, and the whole onus behind the Real ID was that you have to prove you are who you claim you are to be. And so I'm concerned that we have a means to do that. And if I'm not in favor of allowing someone that may be on some criminal watch list somewhere of supplying them with a driver's license in the state of Minnesota.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, there may be many people who get a driver's license in Minnesota today who are on a criminal watch list. There is no difference.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to some of the comments raised earlier by the committee members, I just wanted to point to the Chamber of Commerce letter that was provided in support of this House file. And just to quote, Minnesota employers rely on immigrants, workers to serve our customers to do this safely. Workers should complete driver's license training, testing, and licensing requirements, including securing insurance. We believe this will make roads safer for all drivers. So, yes, this is definitely a bill that has broad bipartisan support, and Minnesota employers, those that are hiring hardworking immigrants that make our state economy better, I just want to applaud them for their support. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Johnson.
Chair Lesh, Representative Winkler. I also have some concerns on Section 7, disclosure of information, or actually Section 11, certain data of noncompliance for identification persons and agents on sharing data. Representative Scott brought it up about checking a deportation status. It mentions putting up walls, that somebody else mentioned putting up walls. I want to think back and let everybody remember it's about 18 years ago, September 11, 2001. Prior to that, Attorney General Janet Reno had placed walls and barriers between departments, intelligence agencies, law enforcement, so they couldn't communicate with each other. And we had September 11th happen. And in the inquiry, it was because of those barriers that we had that tragic incident. Now, in my career in law enforcement, I've picked up a number of people who are here illegally. And yes, it's illegally because it is a crime under federal law to enter our country without going through the borders and not having proper checks. That is a federal crime. So it is illegal. Not undocumented, it is illegal. I picked up a number of them, and I would call either Border Patrol or ICE, and we'd deal with it. The vast majority were let on their way without any problems and just a short delay. And a lot of times ICE would help them getting and work with them to get legal status. But I also picked up a few that had been deported multiple times. They were not allowed in this country because they were felons. They committed very heinous crimes. One had been deported 12 times. And it's something to get here under legal status, you have to prove that you're not a danger to the citizens of this country. You haven't had any problems. Right now, if you get a DWI in Minnesota, a lot of times you can't even go to Canada. We need to find out who is coming here and why. Most 99% of these people out here are great people, but we have those few we have to watch out for because it only takes one to make some major problems. I have a lot of respect for the people that are that come here, and that I had some good friends that have come here, and I worked with them to work them through the process. But if we don't double check, we could have some problems. And putting up these barriers is a great reason and a great, I can see the problems coming. So I think we need to really look and discuss what we're doing here to make sure the citizens of this state are safe.
Chair Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very quickly, I do want to thank the author for bringing us this bill, Representative Gomez as well. I've worked on this issue for a number of years, and I just want to make very quick observation. One is that everyone knows that the people who are least likely to commit crimes in the United States are immigrants. That's been well established through data over the years. We're talking about a driver's license bill here whose purpose is about keeping our roads safe in Minnesota. I think the arguments have been made here for that. Mr. Chair, I understand that our focus is on doing data policy vetting, and I think we did some very good data policy vetting. Members, 12 states in the United States allow some access similar to this, what's in this bill, for residents in those states. 12 states, the District of Columbia, and the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico. That's 88 million Americans who live in jurisdictions where this type of law keeps their roads safe. That's 27% of the American population. That's over a quarter of the United States that lives in states that allows access similar to driver's license, similar to this bill before us. This type of legislation has been powerfully vetted with the federal government for over a decade now. Those states have worked to be compliant with federal law, with the Real ID law, have arrived at strong agreements with the federal government about the appropriate nature of each state to determine for itself the best way in which it can keep its roads safe. This is a good bill, and I want to thank the authors for bringing us to it today.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. Before we move to closing statements from the authors, I just wanted to state, members, that this current status that we've had in the wake of 9/11 is the result of something that we've seen repeatedly in Minnesota and American history. Now, keep in mind, if you're talking about concerns over immigration and what they could do, a lot of people favor an official language. Keep in mind that if we had a vote on official language in the first 50 years of this nation's history, it would have been German. Okay? Y'all have been eating sauerkraut sandwiches down at the Rathskeller, okay? And that's because of immigration. Now you can say, well, hold on a second. That was legal immigration. Well, you know what? The bar was very, very, very different back then. It was at a very different level. And these were folks that joined us around statehood. And the predecessor of my battalion, 2 of the 135, the 1st Minnesota Volunteers, had separate companies for national origin based on language because you need to know what the commander was saying, right? You had a Swedish company. You had a several German-speaking companies, English-speaking company. It's the history of this state. And their children who lived in Minnesota during the First World War were subjected to one of the worst oppressive regimes under the Commission for Public Safety that violated a lot of rights in a xenophobic manner, mostly anti-German sentiment, very quickly after which they painted over the German stenciling in the Rathskeller at the time, out of fear, just like the things we did after 9/11. And Ms. Alesna, who talked about the Japanese internment, one of the most shameful periods in our nation's history because of how brazen it was, and we knew we were doing wrong at the time. We knew it, and we still did it against the nation in a war who was putting people in concentration camps, and we put folks in concentration camps ourselves. Then we get 9/11, and there is
additional fear, and we want status check. And I understand that is human nature. That happens no matter who's in charge, we get afraid. But at some point, we need to recognize that the history of America and the future of America have been our new folks. I don't know why it seems that generations that stay here repeatedly get a little bit soft, a little bit comfortable, a little bit privileged, and we rely upon new Americans to remind us what our mission is and why we succeed and are such a great nation. So I just wanted to say that. I know that, you know, the chair of this committee doesn't make those statements too often, but this bill is pretty important to me, and thank you for the authors for bringing in. Any closing comments?
Mr. Chair, members, I first of all thank you for the conversation and diving into some of the details on the issues that relate to this committee. Representative Johnson, to your final comments, you make a very good case for federal immigration reform, which we do not have. We have the 99% of people that you referred to living here, working here, taking care of families, starting businesses, trying to live their lives in a system that doesn't work. Creating a driver's license system like this will not change whether or not the individuals that you're concerned about are in Minnesota or not. But what this process will allow is for people who are living their lives here and trying to do the best they can in an imperfect world under a broken system to live their lives with some more decency, to improve the safety of our roads, and to make sure that Minnesota is a place where people can live, work, and survive without the fear that a routine traffic stop will result in their deportation. And so I guess I just would ask you to think about what else, what will happen if we don't take action? The issue will remain. The problem will remain unsolved. We can't count on the federal government to do this, but we can enhance our own safety. And why would we wait to do that? Because we are concerned about something that this bill won't affect anyway. It's not related. This is an opportunity to create public safety, help the economy, and help a whole lot of good people. And I would ask you to favorably consider the bill.
Thank you. Roll call has been called. Any other comments from members? Roll call has been called for. The motion, the chair's motion, is that House File 1500, as amended, be re-referred to Ways and Means. Committee Legislative Assistant will take the roll.
Chair Lesh?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Yes.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Barr?
No.
Representative Cantrell?
Yes.
Representative Carlson?
Yes.
Representative Considine?
Yes.
Representative Grossel?
Nope.
Representative Hassan?
Yes.
Representative Herr?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Lucero?
No.
Representative Noor?
Yes.
Representative O'Neill?
No.
Representative Robbins?
No.
Representative Zhang?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I think I was skipped.
Representative Liebling?
Yes.
Representative Mariani? I'm sorry.
C.
With 11 votes in favor and 7 in opposition, the motion passes. Members, we can probably hang 3 bills, maybe 4 if we're unable to complete all bills during our committee. We will reconvene at 5 in the basement hearing room. There's a wage theft bill requiring court notices from Chair Scott and a shared parenting bill from Chair Scott, and then possibly House File 554. There being no other business before the committee, one moment. Members, please be respectful. The committee is still conducting business, and we need to get over to session. Go ahead, Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, as far as testimonies and so forth for Wednesday evening with House File 8 and House File 9, what your plan is there?
For Wednesday. The scope is going to be substantially restricted on House File 8, Chair Scott, and I don't think it will on House File 9. But the last hearing I was in, everyone testified the same on both of them anyway, so we'll probably.
So have you set time parameters or anything for that, Mr. Chair?
15 minutes pro, 15 minutes con,
and so
and then 30 to 40 minutes of discussion.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, will the pro side, will their introduction and explanation of the bill be included in that 15 minutes?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Great.
Thank you, members. There being no other business before the committee is adjourned. Session starts at 7, by the way.